This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Hello and welcome to Pod's Own Country, the Yorkshire Post political podcast. I'm Rob Parsons, the Yorkshire Post political editor, here for another half an hour or so of political conversation about Yorkshire and the issues that affect it. Our guest today is a great one for anyone who has been following the devolution debate and is interested in who holds the powers to make decisions that affect all of our lives. Jill Morris, the CEO of public affairs agency DevoConnect, we'll be talking about whether the government is still interested in creating powerful new local leaders and what we might see in Yorkshire. But first, as many listeners will know, June is Pride Month, dedicated to celebrating the LGBTQ plus communities all around the world. Pride is usually celebrated with lots of parades and marches, but with coronavirus and social distancing still in place, things will be a little bit different this year. A lot of events have been postponed or cancelled, but they will continue on things like Zoom, TikTok and other social media. But as well as celebrating our diversity, it's also an opportunity to talk about the issues facing the LGBTQ plus communities and where we need to make progress. Someone I know will have some great insights into this is my colleague Susie Beaver, a news correspondent at the Yorkshire Post who takes a keen interest in reporting on inequalities and social justice. So hi there, Susie. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Very good. I'm very good, thank you. So this is an area, you know, you've reported on and written about quite a lot. What would you say is the biggest issue faced by the LGBTQ plus community at the moment in 2021?
I definitely feel as though, and this isn't to downplay any other issues that are faced by the community at the moment, but I do feel that we have a huge elephant in the room in this country at the moment, and that's in the form of transphobia. And it feels like it's the last acceptable or should I say maybe accepted form of discrimination. And we can see this in the escalating sort of hate crime reports in recent years. So particularly since 2011. So 10 years ago, there were just three hate, and this is in West Yorkshire, so I've been looking at some local police figures. But in 2011, there were only three hate crimes reported against trans people in that year. And that figure last year went up to 218, which doesn't sound like a huge amount, you know, in for one year, considering how many people there are in West Yorkshire, as an example. But, you know, that's still one crime reported sort of every 1.5, 2 days. And, you know, when you consider as well how few people actually report these crimes. So, you know, I spoke to a charity in Sheffield fairly recently, like an LGBTQ plus support charity. And they're seeing rising incidents of transgender people who've experienced violence and abuse and harassment. But they told me that only a fraction of these people feel able to actually report it to the police. So, you know, ultimately, a lot of people who are, you know, lucky enough to have never experienced real discrimination, you know, might say otherwise, but we live in a society still where some people can't walk down the street or go to the supermarket or whatever without being attacked or discriminated against because of who they are. And that's a really sad state of affairs to be in. And, you know, I think a lot of this is being enabled and sometimes even positively encouraged by certain public figures who've, you know, built a platform from saying ignorant and hateful things sometimes about marginalized communities like transgender people. And, you know, just because you don't understand something, just because it's something that's beyond your sort of field of understanding, doesn't mean that it's not real. And it doesn't give you the green card to invalidate other people's experiences. And the word woke gets thrown around quite a lot now, and it's become something that's almost weaponized politically. But, you know, this isn't about political wokeness or about people not being able to have their freedom of speech. This is just about people's basic fundamental right to exist free from prejudice and abuse because of who they are.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're talking about transphobia there, but do you think Britain still has problems with homophobia, and to what extent do you think that's the case?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. You know, obviously, it seems something a lot less prevalent than transphobia. But just looking at statistics for our local police forces in Yorkshire, hate directed at the LGBTQ plus community in general is the second most common aggravating factor after racial hate crimes. So in West Yorkshire as an example, and I've got examples for sort of all the different areas, but in West Yorkshire, homophobic hate crime has risen almost tenfold since 2011. Now, you know, obviously police will always say, well, that can be put down to there being sort of more awareness and increased confidence in victims in reporting. And, you know, in a way it is. But then when you look at last year, when, you know, people were stuck inside for a large portion of the year, during the lockdown, recorded hate crimes against gay, lesbian and bisexual people fell. So obviously it's not all just down to whether people are reporting these crimes or not. A lot of that is to do with them rising in general. In West Yorkshire, there were 250 homophobic hate crimes in the first 3 months of last year. That was, you know, obviously before lockdown hit. In Humberside, between April 2017 and March last year, there were 577 homophobic hate crimes. And this is homophobic hate crimes, not transphobic. They're increasing year on year. In North Yorkshire, there were 139 hate crimes against gay, lesbian and transsexual and bisexual people, in the year up to March 2020. And the figures I have for South Yorkshire aren't as recent, unfortunately, but they only go up to 2019. But they also saw a rise from 77 to 380 incidents in just 2 years. So it is everywhere. And we are seeing rising headlines and things like that. I mean, I saw a really disturbing headline on the Liverpool Echo just the other day about a spate of homophobic hate crimes in Merseyside. I mean, elsewhere, you know, in the north, GMP saw reports of homophobic hate crimes, rise from 423 to 1,231 between 2014 and 2020. So it is a very much a prevalent issue.
Yeah, and those numbers are astonishing, really, and I guess it provides all the more reason why Pride Month and Pride events should continue to exist so that these issues can be considered a bit more. I mean, are there still misconceptions about Pride, do you think? And is it still an important event for sort of Yorkshire and the wider
absolutely.
North?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, definitely. There's definitely, I think the biggest misconception about Pride is over the origins of it and why it exists in the first place. And that is because, first and foremost, it's a protest. You know, a lot of people assume that it's a celebration and a festival, which it is. But, you know, it all started 52 years ago this week when members of the LGBTQ plus community rioted following police raids at the Stonewall Inn in Manhattan, which is obviously, you know, known as the Stonewall Riots. And I think a lot, you know, like I said, a lot of people assume that Pride is a festival of celebration and an excuse for us all to sort of get our Pride flags out and have, you know, a great time, which it is. And it's fantastic. But its roots are in decades and centuries of discrimination. And you know, an entire community being made to feel invisible and like, you know, criminalized. And that, you know, that's something that culminated in a protest over 50 years ago. And it's something that is marked still every year this year. And, you know, every Pride Month, there's going to be people who say, oh, you know, where are the celebrations for straight people and cisgender people, which is just so frustrating because this isn't about you. It's not, you know, it's just be glad that you don't need one because ultimately it's a protest for people's right to exist. And, you know, in terms of its importance to the north of England, I can't stress enough how much of a staple it is, like not just culturally, but economically as well. Like Leeds Pride alone, which is the biggest Pride festival in the UK that is free for everyone. Because Manchester Pride now you have to, it's like a ticketed event, but Leeds Pride alone generates more than £4 million each year, apparently. So that was sort of figures that were on the Leeds Council website. Manchester's, which obviously, as we know, is, you know, probably the biggest one outside London, I think, and Brighton. But Manchester's, this is in 2016, so 5 years ago, generated between an estimated £19 and £25 million for the city's economy. So, you know, I mean, obviously, a lot of things are a lot more important than money. I think ultimately, every Pride event, you know, even if it's these massive ones like Leeds and Manchester and Liverpool as well has a really big one. You know, even if it's these huge ones that are sort of almost like tourist attractions now, and you have huge like celebrities showing up and you have these big floats with, you know, soap stars on them and things like that, and they attract people from all over the country. So even from huge events like that to, you know, these little ones in smaller towns where, you know, you just hang a few flags in the center of the town and have a few market stalls on and things like that. It doesn't matter how big it is or small it is, just the fact that they're there and the council puts them on, it's a show of solidarity, I think. And, you know, it shows that our differences are welcomed and they're celebrated. And, you know, when you look at those hate crime figures that I just mentioned earlier, it's so, so important that we still have these mainstream events because they remind people ultimately that they're seen and they're celebrated and, you know, they're welcomed here because, you know, we need to create an environment where everyone is accepted no matter who they are.
Yeah, I think, as you say, it's hugely important that events like Pride continue to exist. So, Susie, that is fascinating and really interesting food for thought there. So thank you again for that.
Thank you for having me.
No problem at all. And now let's hear a bit from our guest this week.
It was 7 years ago this week that the then Chancellor, George Osborne, set out his vision for the so-called Northern Powerhouse, which included serious devolution of powers and budgets for any city that wanted to move to a new model of city government. Mr. Osborne boasted that this would mean a mayor for Leeds and Manchester with similar powers to those in London. If we fast forward to 2021, the progress towards reaching this aim has been, I think it's fair to say, slow and painful, at least in this part of the world. We now have powers and budgets devolved to metro mayors in South and West Yorkshire, but critics say their powers are nowhere near what's needed to tackle some of our more pressing issues. And also, what about rural North Yorkshire and the Humber, where talks about a devolution deal have barely got off the ground? So someone who may well have some insights into where things are going is my guest today, Jill Morris, who is the CEO of devolution-focused public affairs agency DevoConnect. DevoConnect prides itself on being able to inform, shape and influence the future policy debate. And I think it's fair to say this is an area where there's still some work to do to convince policymakers of the merits of handing powers from the centralised Whitehall system to local leaders. So Jill, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, good to be here, Rob.
Good to have you on. So before we start, why don't you just tell us a little bit about DevoConnect and what it does?
Well, I think the reason we're different and very much a focus on that whole idea that Westminster, where we have the most centralized government, and the whole range of issues that we've faced over the last couple of years, over 7 years, you've seen a real shake-up of politics where people have felt left behind. We've had astonishing results just recently, taking us right up to speed with Chesham and Amersham, where politics really matters to people. But we need, at this stage, and certainly now, it's been a roller coaster with Brexit, the pandemic. Things have got in the way of a lot of promises that Boris has made in terms of levelling up, build, shovel-ready projects, all going a bit quiet, I think, now, because I don't think they expected the pandemic to go on so long. So what we do at Devo Connect is basically bang the drum and look at things from a devolved and decentralised lens, use the UK Parliament as far as possible to win cross-party support wherever possible, and really join up that voice across the North or across the Midlands and across devolution centres to say, you know, we can, we do have a strong political voice. And I think, you know, we are unique in what we're doing. The reason we do that is because you can see the shape of politics today. When we have an 80-seat majority, it's really important that people don't feel left behind and they do feel that they've got a voice. And moreover, that there are opportunities, real opportunities, to remove regional disparities and some of those huge inequalities that we've seen during the pandemic, from housing, transport, and today even on education. So that's what I sort of do, or that's what we do at Devo Connect. We bang the drum, we hopefully make a difference. We're really proud that we're just launching a health devolution paper today in response to the government's efforts on integrated care, for example. So later this week on social care, we will be doing our campaign there for a social care people's plan. All of those things, yeah, we bring people together and really ramp up the volume for not just the people of Yorkshire, but across hopefully England. But passionate about devolution, because I really do think it's part of the solution. And I think government are missing a trick, particularly on those two hard policy areas, which I've mentioned, like social care, which is, you know, are they having a meeting or not? You know, the other emergency, apart from recovery, is net zero and getting there. Lots of different, you know, targets across the North, 2050 or sooner, largely sooner, in most councils and combined authorities. So how do you scale that up? And then, you know, the whole regional approach, the difficult things are really, and that's what's happened with devolution as well. I think it's been too difficult for government to work out what to do with it. So hence there's no mention of it in the Queen's speech, and the levelling up white paper is again causing quite a few question marks about what levelling up actually means. And so the too hard to deal with issues for the government, I think, are coming thick and fast. And I'd sort of narrow those down to devolution, which I claim is part of the solution to levelling up, and must be, there must be a more decentralised approach to regions. Social care, huge problem, not going to go away, need to do something. And again, it becomes a distraction. And again, you know, the huge burning deck of getting to net zero, where we need jobs and skills to get moving again. So they're sort of intertwined, but I think the government's not necessarily looking at a holistic approach to levelling up. And I think yesterday's announcement, or not announcement, it's not an announcement at all, it's speculation about the Integrated Rail Plan and Northern Powerhouse Rail is a huge disappointment. But we can talk about that till the cows come home.
Not at all. I mean, I guess devolution is one of those areas, isn't it, that you could apply to a whole number of different topics. And as you say, Northern Powerhouse Rail, which is a story the Yorkshire Post has covered this week in terms of whether the Manchester to Leeds leg, which is another thing that was promised by George Osborne, is going to be delivered in the way the government's promised, and that, you know, that has links with devolution, because obviously Transport for the North, the body that was set up to sort of provide a voice for northern leaders, there's a fear that it's being sort of sidetracked as part of, or sort of marginalized as part of that process. But I mean, when we write about devolution a lot at the Yorkshire Post, and I feel like some people when they read about it, they roll their eyes a bit and like say, oh, not again. But like, and obviously there's all these wide-ranging issues that the government needs to tackle. Why is devolution the answer to those questions? Why should people care about whether devolution is happening or not happening?
Yeah, I think a couple of things there is that maybe devolution is the wrong word, but and it doesn't mean a lot to people. But if you say to them what we're talking about is how you work, live, rest and play, talking about your children, your family, making sure that we can have a more regional approach. It means growth, and it means opportunity and not being left behind. I think it begins to sound a bit more sexy and appealing to people. And so there's a lot of talk at the moment around place. And there's a lot of talk around place-based regeneration. One could argue, is that what we're talking about when we talk about devolution? But I think it's bigger than that. I think it's that sense of not going back to that dreadful phrase of not being left behind, that it is actually your voice. And Andy Burnham, across the Pennines there, certainly used that as his message. And we've seen that, you know, literally almost every day through the pandemic, there is a voice. I talked about banging the drum earlier, but it's that collaboration and convening and being able to have the power to do things differently. And if you get that collective power and that collaboration working across the parties and across the geography, it's enormously, enormously powerful when you have a government who can basically do what they like and at the same time have the biggest economic problem that we have seen in more than a generation. The impact of what this pandemic, the impact of the pandemic is yet to be seen. The impact of really of Brexit is yet to be seen, because we're just not moving in the way we, goods and services and what we want. We're not moving. We've seen bits and bobs that are, you know, people say, oh yes, but you know, all those holidays, and the travel and the movement, I mean, people, we haven't seen what's to come. But so why does it matter to you, for all those people who did vote for Brexit or not? It does mean about taking back control, and it does mean that you have the right, as you've seen, to really use your voice. And I think tomorrow's generation will be more sort of tuned into that, because you can't literally manage a pandemic from Westminster and Whitehall. You can have that central overview, but we've seen time and time again it makes sense to have a regional plan or a strategy that actually boosts and generates the economy, whether it's a station in Leeds or, you know, a port in Liverpool or Tees Valley or wherever. all of these things around about getting jobs, get the economy moving, getting infrastructure happening. We've got to make that economic case for Yorkshire, not Yorkshire, but across the north and across England, to say, yeah, devolution works. I mean, we saw that in Tees Valley. We saw it literally in Greater Manchester as well. People saw, rightly or wrongly, whatever, Ben Houchin, whatever your political persuasion, they can see quite clearly what a mayor has done. And having an elected mayor has been good for Tees Valley. It's brought jobs. They can see it. They don't need to explain it. And similarly, I think in Greater Manchester, there is a thing saying, well, thank God we've got Andy Burnham.
Yeah.
So I think once you've got it, it's not a problem. And similarly, in London, that's what happened. You know, Ken Livingstone didn't have a lot of power originally. I worked on that bill. But now you can see, you know, nobody questions what they're for. And that sense of regional identity is really important, I think.
Yeah. On that subject, I mean, you're talking about the Tees Valley mayor and other areas as well. And obviously, when George Osborne came up with the idea of the Northern powerhouse being supported by these powerful metro mayors, his vision was for city regions, and he spoke about having a mayor for Manchester, a mayor for Leeds. So, do the same arguments stack up for, say, for example, North Yorkshire, which is obviously, well, it has a city in it, City of York, but it's mostly a rural area with the dales and the moors and the coast. Can devolution work for areas like that? Because obviously in North Yorkshire, there's still a live debate going on about exactly who should be making the decisions and, you know, how local government should be organised. But in your view, you know, devolution and is the answer for North Yorkshire and areas like it as well?
Absolutely. I don't see, I see the city region. I mean, I've been looking at devolution really since John Prescott onwards, in terms of one and two, and where we are now and looking at what it might look like in the future. But I always say when I do talk to people, it's the things that get in the way of a good Devo deal is geography and politics. I don't see that urban versus rural is a problem. I think it's absolutely, when we talk around any issue really, the urban voice, rural voice often gets left behind. And it is around growth, but it's a different, you know, whether you're talking about broadband, transport, electric vehicles, energy, heat pumps, those issues, how does it, you know, you still need to have that plan for housing, for that matter, or health, how it works rurally and how that connectivity between cities and, and other towns and villages and rural communities. It's really important that you get it right. I think the problem, I mean, you know, I'm sitting here in Cumbria, or the south bit of Cumbria, and there's all kinds of potential Devo deals, including, South Lakeland's moving across with a bit of Lancashire, and you'll see a lot more of that. But some of the work we're doing very much on net zero, we are looking very much at the rural impact of things. And again, it's that sense of identity. I think, you know, that Cumbrian, which Yorkshire has a great deal of, but I think if it makes sense, and that's probably where a lot of it went wrong with John Prescott's sort of the RDAs, not necessarily the RDAs, but that feeling of, do they actually identify in that geography? I think the government's plan, or George Osborne, let's call it George Osborne's plan, and who obviously, was a good idea. Still think it is a good idea. Whether, and where it goes from here is we can carry on discussing. But I don't think you can say it's just the role of cities in being that algorithm. And I think post-pandemic, there's lots of questions around, you know, where the focus of economic, you know, where the economic drivers actually are.
Yeah.
And I hear that all the time. You see the Towns Fund, all of those things. And I think it'll be a lot of cherry picking, which exactly is what sort of happened with the Northern Powerhouse Rail. That's the worry, that there's a lot of, there's going to be a lot of upset from Red Wall and Blue Wall Conservatives arguing and fighting, you know, and potentially against each other. Whereas actually what we need to do is really get behind those big projects. I was talking to somebody yesterday and just sort of saying, you know, we've just got to move on HS2 and say it's done. It's happening. Get on with it. There's no point arguing about whether we are or we aren't. We're doing it and it needs to go all the way. And as for Northern Powerhouse Rail, you just, you know, there's going to be quite a rumpus, you know, if we don't move faster and accelerate what actually needs to be done.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right on that. With talking about the way that sort of mayors are created and you know the structures that are set up around them, the Yorkshire Post has campaigned, or well, we've called for a number of years for a Yorkshire-wide mayoral authority to be created. And you know that was an idea that had a lot of support for quite a while, you know, with most of the local council leaders in the region were backing it, and the CBI and the TUC, etc. But obviously it never came to pass, and now we have these deals that are more limited in their geographical scope. I mean, do you think that there's still potential for bigger, for powers to be devolved to bodies that cover a wider area than just West Yorkshire or South Yorkshire or Greater Manchester? Obviously, we have, you know, things like the NP11 bringing together all the local enterprise partnerships and things like that. But and transport for the north as well, I suppose. Like, is that an idea that could still be developed? Sort of devolution to bigger, wider areas, sort of bigger geographies.
Yeah, I think it's about the scale of the ambition, really. And I think you can go right down to sort of parish council level. But what I'm talking about is really that place-based regeneration, economic growth, and in securing inward investment is so important. And if you're working collaboratively, and the idea of the Northern Powerhouse or Midlands Engine are not bad ideas, it's just who's in charge of it. And that's an awful lot of geography and an awful lot of power, and politics, again, will get in the way. What happened, I think, on One Yorkshire is it was too big for government to basically give power to potentially a Labour elected mayor. I think that was a real stumbling block, plus the politics locally got in the way of everybody, you know, David Cameron said rats in a sack. You know, and I know that Yorkshire has got a hugely proud heritage and you know, identity, but politically it doesn't necessarily gel. So I think my predictions for what will happen, and I think probably I concur with the conversations I've had with Conservatives and others over the years, that One Yorkshire probably was too big, and you know it's a fascinating geography, but I think, and the politics didn't quite work. There was a lot of willingness, but I do think the idea of having four, you know, south, west, north, I've left one out, east. Is not beyond the wit of man. And then to sort of have that sort of collaboration, I mean, we've got 10 elected mayors now in England, and across the, you know, six moving, you know, looking at the north as a whole. And if say Cumbria, other rumours about Lancashire's got plans, has that comes together, Warrington and Cheshire, there's been, again, politics gets in the way for most of these, or the lack of, or the unitarisation, I can never say that word. So that sort of gets in the way, and that goes back to my fear in government or in Whitehall that it's all going to be too difficult, whereas actually it isn't that difficult if you actually use it as a real, if you actually sort of move away from, we don't want to give it, we don't want any more Andy Burnhams and Steve Rotherhams, we want more Ben Houchins and Andy Streets. Well, I think what we found is that the potential is there, but I think it's more around, you know, growth, and who knows, certainly in North Yorkshire, you may well get a Conservative mayor, and there's potential to do that, but it's getting the MPs and the collaboration and the local government all on one side and actually saying, we're doing this for the greater good and the greater economy, and to have some control and work together. Because I think the broader point about devolution, it is about how you work together, and it's not party political and it's not centralised. It is actually thinking about local economies, what makes them tick, what do people want, and it's more responsive. Again, that's a very long answer.
No, that's a great answer. I mean, yeah, I agree that it is about working together, and you know, there's a lot of talk about what powers mayors have and what powers they don't have, and I think it's agreed that, you know, this ability to convene people and be a sort of figurehead for their local area and sort of bang the drum in the way that Andy Burnham is, and, you know, Dan Jarvis in South Yorkshire, that's a pretty vital thing going forward. But well, it's a fascinating agenda, and I think I hope that we'll get answers sooner rather than later on what form it's going to take. Hopefully that will come in the levelling up white paper that we've been promised later this year, but we'll come back and talk to you again, Jill, about where things stand at that point. So Jill Morris, thank you for speaking to me.
Yeah, that's been great, Rob, really good. I could, as you know, talk all day about devolution.
Me too, me too. It's lovely to have you. All thank right. you again, bye bye.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Pods Own Country. I do hope you've enjoyed what you've heard this week, and do leave us a review on whichever service you get your podcasts on if you'd like to hear more from us. And if you have any ideas for things we ought to be discussing, please drop me an email at rob.parsons@jpimedia.co.uk, and we'll look forward to seeing you next time. Thanks, bye bye.